Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
It's that time of the month again. Let's go, Brandon, where we rip from today's headline news you don't get anywhere else with our favorite local celebrity, bad boy Brandon Lewis of TennesseeConservativeNews.com. Brandon, how are you today?
I am doing fantastic. This week I have been called both a bad boy and a flamethrower.
Wow, and bad boy flamethrower.
It's just very interesting because all I do is tell people what actually happens.
That's right. Well, you're getting punished for that all the time. That's what the good book says, somewhere in the back. Well, it was inevitable, wasn't it? After the shooting in Nashville by the deranged transgender person and the expelling of the three, that wasn't really expelling very long. They didn't miss a single session, but were on a lot of TV air and raised a lot of money. Governor says Tennessee lawmakers must work together to keep firearms away from dangerous people. Who decides who's dangerous? Are you and I dangerous people, Brandon?
Well, Bill Lee thought anybody that wanted to worship during the pandemic was dangerous and selfish. He thought that people that wanted to keep their masks their mouth uncovered, that masks worked, which we now know that they don't, and that the vaccines were going to stop transmission, which they didn't. And so I don't trust the man because he has taken a sledgehammer to a fly several times in his career. And mainly all that it requires is a little bit of media pressure because Bill Lee, McNally, and Cameron Sexton, I've called them rhinos in the past, but what I'm starting to realize is these guys are basically just old Southern Democrats, and they are a couple of steps removed from their more radical counterparts that they play fight with. But all the money comes from the same corporations. They're all working for the same puppet masters. And so this is just another example of Bill Lee walking back his campaign promise to protect our constitutional rights, which he gave us in his 10 for 10 campaign promises.
There's actually a name for that, isn't there? Dixiecrat.
I believe we do have primarily Dixiecrats in leadership and a handful of conservatives. That's really what we've got running the show up in Nashville. You know, John Harrison, Harris, with the Tennessee Firearms Association made a very good comment, and that is we already have laws on the books in Tennessee to deal with mental illness. And the thing that needs to happen is when someone is seen to be or found to be mentally ill, then we need to remove not the guns from all the citizens, and not to make that more difficult and onerous. What we need to do is find a way to restrain or to in some way help the person that has a mental illness. And it really frustrates me that all through this conversation that neither Bill Lee, McNally, nor Sexton, or most Republicans have the balls to simply say, when you think you are something you aren't, you're mentally ill. And if you think that you are something you aren't, if your delusion has gone that far, there's not much else you probably will not be deluded or convinced into doing. Because if you don't know what you are and how you were born, I mean, you're already off your rocker, and that needs to be something that needs to be looked into.
Yeah, I think I'm a podcaster, but there's no medicine for that. For those 80,000 people who moved from California to Tennessee in the last year, which is a record for the state, yeah, a few of them maybe from New York and Illinois, but the rest of them, what's a Dixiecrat?
A Dixiecrat is someone who... I guess the best way to look at it is in Tennessee up until about 10 to 15 years ago, we were a Democrat state, and it primarily has to do with the lingering resentments of the South related to the Civil War and the polarization. I would say that the alignment with the Democratic Party was probably more tribal and cultural than values shared, and that leaked over to a couple of other generations. I mean, we're not that far removed from the Civil War. We really aren't. Yeah. And I mean, my
dad... Sure, not Reconstruction.
Not Reconstruction, no. My grandfather...
They're pissed off about that.
Yes. My grandfather was born in the 1800s. My dad was born in 37. Dad remembers conversations. And my family actually supported the Union. and had a little store in Alabama. And when they came back from the war, nobody would buy anything from them. So there's a lot of lingering Dixiecrats around. But that's at the end of it, Steve, really what we have, it has less to do with ideology. It has more to do with money. And all the money comes from the medical establishment. All the press comes from the left-leaning, corporately funded media. And so Republican primary voters are usually the last people on the minds of anybody in leadership up in Nashville.
Yeah. So not only do we have what I call refugees, people that left their old states and became refugees like me, Tennessee seems to really like its illegal immigrants as well. The Republicans run on anti-immigrant rhetoric, but yet, here's a headline. Bill to require immigration status check of potential voters clears another hurdle in Tennessee House. Is it for real this time?
It probably will pass. And I am so glad Brian Ritchie has been exposing the corruption and the lack of conservative backbone and bringing legislation that actually has a chance. He kind of took up the mantle that Bruce Griffey left off. It is amazing to watch someone who is more concerned for their constituents than their political careers and their pocketbook. And that's somebody that Ritchie has been. I hope that he will stay that way. And he is essentially just saying that, you know, before you can vote, we need to have your immigration status checked. Will it pass? I think it probably will. And here's why. It doesn't take a dollar out of a corporation's pocket. It doesn't take a worker out of the cheap labor lobby. I don't think most people leave Mexico and Guatemala and other parts of South America to come here and vote in Tennessee. They're primarily driven here for almost exclusively financial opportunity. And so the magnets that will stop illegal immigration, such as the mass transportation, the taxpayer-funded education, and the benefits and the handouts, those have never been touched by Republicans in Tennessee, because at the end of the day, they're really not that serious about it. As the Chamber of Commerce and the NFIB and all of the representatives of the corporate lobbyists and the check writers come down hard whenever anything is proposed that would actually deter illegal immigration in the state of Tennessee. So I'm glad this is happening. I think it's great, but I sadly feel like it's probably far more symbolic than it will be impactful.
Yeah. And the Republicans do like money. You know, they like toll roads. They like all kinds of ways of taking some
out
of our
pockets. Those are choice lanes.
Choice lanes. But why don't they just tax the remittances? That'll keep them away. I've said that for decades. I used to live in California. If you just tax the money that they send back to their other countries, we get a piece of that. They wouldn't be working in Tennessee, in my opinion. But moving on, if the third world doesn't come here on its own, I guess they can just force their values on us. Tell us about another headline from your website, World Economic Forum Driven Climate Action Plan Adopted by Chattanooga City Council.
Well, I think we're going to have to change the name of Chattanooga from the scenic city to the surveillance city. And I moved out of that place after being in it for 20 years. I love Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm a huge ambassador for this area. I have convinced friends and family to move here. But just like Memphis, just like parts of Knoxville and Nashville, everything woke turns to crap. And we've built up something fantastic here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. But Democrats are slowly but surely trying to destroy it. And this is just one more nail in the coffin. Our homeless problem, which is not really a homeless problem, which is a urban campers who love to live on government subsidies and do drugs out in the woods. That we got a problem with that, which is vagrancy and loitering more than it is homelessness, is rampant in Chattanooga. Our crime is out of control and unchecked. And now they're wanting to surveil primarily law-abiding citizens and impose all these kind of Green New Deal restrictions on things. And in the future, it is a cult. It is a cult of Gaia, the goddess of the earth. It's been around for a long time. You can read about it in the Old Testament. And there's nothing new under the sun. And every few years, a new group puts a different label on it, and they trot it out there. And it's primarily about control. and they're going to continue to use it. We had some patriots and some groups push back, but Steve, as is often the case with so many of these issues, we have some of the lowest information voters in Tennessee of almost any other place. And these are folks that know everything in the world about what's going on in Washington, many of those people, but very little about what's going on in the city and the county and the state government, which is why I'm so glad that you do what you do.
And you do what you do. But tell me what is going on Lebanon, Tennessee, right? No one's ever heard of it. We've heard of Lebanon in the Middle East, but there is a Lebanon, Tennessee. You and I have heard of it. They flew in New York dance crew to perform at an elementary school. I repeat, elementary school, my dear Watson. Last week, your headline, parents demand answers after dirty pop party group performs at elementary school. I thought they didn't have enough money to teach the kids to read and write. How are they flying a dance troupe in to flaunt in front of the little kids?
Well, if you can't do drag time story hour, you might as well do drag time dance hour.
Chippendales.
Whatever it takes to get the groomers in front of the kids. I mean, before long, they're going to dress them up like ministers and drag them in there. Whatever. I don't know what's next. But essentially, parents were upset about it because, number one, a lot of the music was inappropriate. The attire was inappropriate. The kids came home confused. The gentleman who's the leader of this dance troupe obviously identifies something that is contrary to how he was born. He's very confused.
Probably drinks Bud Light.
Yeah, drinks Bud Light heavily. Has a good story to tell about how he didn't fit in with his with people in his small town growing up, which is kind of like, hey, if you're not okay, you know, it's okay to think like this, to be like this. If you feel like you don't belong, here's a place to be found. Here's a place to be. Here's a way to identify. Here's a way to here's a group of people that will accept you for who you are. And even if it's detrimental to you, and even if it's not God's plan, and if it's not your parents' plan, but it is the government school's plan, and so here we are. And so it is a shame the way that these parents and teachers, or not parents rather, but these teachers and these administrators continue to manipulate our children to their detriment. And I'll close with this. Recently, it kind of came to my mind. We've had to pass laws in Tennessee schools here recently banning pornography, banning telling white kids there's something wrong with them because God gave them pale skin. We've had to ban all kind of sexual content in classes and things of that nature that parents don't want. We have to pass laws so that folks can actually comment at their school board meetings. The environment is so toxic and the academic achievement is so low. It's amazing people still let their kids go there, even though it's free. And the analogy I would draw, and we'll move on, is if you heard about a restaurant, a big chain restaurant that had, like, I don't know, several hundred restaurants all over Tennessee, and they continually had company meetings that was statewide about you can't piss in the soup. You can't kick the customers in the groin. You can't defecate on the floor. You can't assault people. You can't spray your guests with pepper spray. Those restaurants would shut down in like a day or two. No one would go eat there. But day after day, we hear headline after headline of how Republicans in their failed government school experiment are trying to tell the folks that are in these government job factories not to do this terrible stuff. And yet they defiantly do it. Publicize that they're going to defiantly do it, and our lawmakers do nothing. And to top it off, they won't even give kids the school choice to escape these academic hellscapes. And that's where we are in Tennessee. So for those of you in California that just moved here thinking that you're going to find a good education and all this crap ain't going to be there, the best thing I can advise you to do is homeschool or private school, and you're not getting any of your tax dollars, so you can kiss that crap goodbye too.
That's right. And that leader of that troop, you know, you think he would have been right at home in New York. Why did he have to come to Lebanon? I was calling him Hillbilly Elliot, but nobody gets that joke. sounds like you do. All right. Sadly, last one we have time with you for until next month, and another month goes by. This one shocked me. Why are they stealing my Let's Go Brandon segment? Tennessee Republican Assembly to feature guest speaker Brandon Lewis of the Tennessee Conservative. What in the world are you going to tell them that they don't already know?
Well, I would say everything. That has been my experience when I go to Republican groups. People really, there's a sense of community at these Republican groups, and there's a sense, there's a huge shared value. And everyone wants to do something, but there's two things they're lacking. They don't really know, unless they subscribe to our publication, what's actually happening. I'll usually trot out 10, 15 things that have gone on in the General Assembly, and I'll say, raise your hands if you actually knew that. And except for the hardcore that actually kind of came there sometimes to see me, or they're the type of people that tell everybody else what's actually going on, it's usually about 90% of the people are like, they don't even know. Like, they just know and believe whatever Bill Lee and Cameron Sexton and Randy McNally tweet, Facebook, or otherwise gets into some rag they read. And number two, they don't know what to do. And so what I hope to do at the Tennessee Republican Assembly meeting, and I've got a funny story, but I don't know if I have time to tell it or not.
Sure.
About the first time I went there, is to talk about my story, to talk about what it's like to be a conservative Christian and why you've got a responsibility to engage in culture and politics. And we're going to talk about what actually is going on in our Tennessee state government. And finally, what are some of the actionable things that you can do aside from venting on social media to make a difference? And that's really what I'm planning on sharing. I hope. We'll see what happens.
Is that open to everybody? Should we put a shout out to it?
It is open to everyone. It's the Tennessee Republican Assembly. It will be at 9:30 a.m. Eastern. I cannot recall the location of the place, but if you go to TennesseeConservativeNews.com and type in Tennessee Republican Assembly in the search button, it should pull up an article with the details.
Okay. Well, thanks, BL. We love having you here on the Mill Creek View. Where can listeners go to find out more about you and something called Big Seven?
The Big
because
Seven.
There is a newsletter.
You said
that nobody knows what's going on. They can read your newsletter every day.
Yes. TennesseeConservativeNews.com. Hit the subscribe button. That's where we send out our news at 11:30 a.m. Eastern every day, Monday through Friday. We ain't got much money and we don't have much staff. So we only get you the news 5 days a week. So you got the weekend off. And then if you want to hear it, if you're a listener like I am and less of a reader, you can go and search Tennessee Conservative wherever you get your news. And once a week, I will read to you and discuss and give you my commentary on the top seven stories in Tennessee, that most of which we're the only news source in many cases reporting on it. You'd never know it happened if we didn't write on it. And we're often the only place that you can find out what's actually going on in your government. And Steve, I appreciate what you do. You need to come down here and see me sometime.
I do. I'm going to see you Saturday. And thanks for that awesome Easter broadcast you did. Folks, go find it on iTunes. Really nice. See you Saturday and back here next month.
Can't wait, buddy. I'll have the whole family in tow.
Awesome.
My name is Simon Ateba with Today News Africa in Washington, D.C. I'm the White House correspondent for Today News Africa, and you are listening to the Mill Creek View podcast. I don't understand.
Welcome to my, no, that's the wrong segment. Steve, welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show where we cover what we just heard. A little bit of an interesting show today. Producer Steve, what did you think of our guest? Let's go, Brandon.
Oh, I like Brandon. He's a fireball and he's a flamethrower and a bad boy. And at least that's his reputation. No, he's a great guy and he's actually doing a wonderful work of, well, telling everybody what's really going on in your capital down there. And that's something that the mainstream media pretty much ignores. And he's right, Steve. So many people get locked into what the mainstream media tells them, which is all Washington, D.C., when in reality, your life as a citizen of Tennessee or my life as a citizen of Washington State is really more dictated by what goes on in my state than it does in the federal world. And so I'm glad you have him on, and he's always a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, I enjoy that segment very much. The Rainbow Jihad comes for the Christians. The Nashville school shooting is another front in the great theological war of our time. Emerald Robinson, fired from Newsmax, by the way. A number of things have become clear in the aftermath of the Nashville school shooting. The killer was a mentally ill woman who targeted a Christian school and killed Christian children because she was a member of the LGBT community and she considered Christians to be her enemies. Hmm. Audrey Hale was engaged, in other words, in the great theological battle of our time between Christianity and the Rainbow Jihad. That coalition of pagans, perverts, pedophiles, atheists, and abortion fanatics, which marches under the pride flag in their unholy war to supplement the dominant religion of the West. There could be no confusion on that score anymore, least of all from the complacent Christians whose moral cowardice has led to this societal crisis. Audrey Hale was not confused. She knew which side she was fighting for. That's why she left behind a manifesto rather than a suicide note. It's a manifesto that the LGBT community doesn't want anyone to read for obvious reasons. Why would a tiny minority of transvestites announce a hot war with the well-armed Christian majority in America? They're crazy, not stupid. But in time for that complacent Christian majority to face facts, The LGBTers definitely want to dominate and supplant you if you won't affirm them. Not affirming them is a crime in their eyes, and that crime justifies your murder. Clip number one, please. 40 seconds through 2 minutes.
...of issues like climate change, they want him to finish.
We the people hired Justin J. Pearson. And we didn't fire him.
Voters in District 86 unrelenting after Justin Pearson, by a vote of 69 to 26, was kicked out of the Tennessee House of Representatives.
He wasn't just coming in here for political reasons. He was coming here and as an individual standing for what's right and what he believed. And as a result, it's what we also believe in. And that's why we are backing him. That's why we have backed him and will continue to back him.
In January, Pearson won his seat that he's now out of by an overwhelming margin in a special election after the death of his predecessor, Representative Barbara Ward Cooper. Boxtown residents say his stance on climate change and his constant push for a cleaner environment is why they propelled him into office.
Faulty air, smells that we smell from down at that treatment plant in the bottom. All this stuff is got something to do with the health of the people in this community. And we never had nobody to speak up for it.
But Pearson did speak out against the Byhalia pipeline, a crude oil pipeline that energy companies wanted to build through downtown Memphis to Byhalia, Mississippi.
Every person in this city deserves clean drinking water. Yeah. That every person in this city deserves clean air to breathe.
That's up to 2 minutes there, Steve.
Thank you. That was one of the two who were expelled and right back to work on Monday morning. I found this interesting Substack by Christina Buttons from Tennessee, Nashville, who writes about gender, pseudoscience, mental health, autism, and critical thinking. Stop conflating gender ideology with gender dysphoria, an explainer guide to the important distinctions between gender ideology and gender dysphoria and between gender activists and transgender or transsexual people. Gender ideology is a set of beliefs about sex and gender that in recent years have become widespread and mainstream despite a lack of empirical evidence to support them. This belief system is derived from a postmodern social theory that emerged in university humanities departments in the 90s called queer theory. Postmodern philosophy explicitly rejects the scientific pursuit of objective truth, and the scholarship produced by postmodernism has been widely criticized as frivolous and unscientific. Here are some common examples of ideological beliefs about gender. Both gender and biological sex are fluid. Both gender and biological sex are a social construct. Biological sex is not binary, but best represents as a spectrum. Biological sex and or gender is assigned at birth rather than observed and recorded. Everyone has a gender identity determined by male and female stereotypes. One can literally be born in the wrong body or have a gender identity that is misaligned with the body. Being trans is innate and biological, similar to being gay. Gender identity is akin to brain sex, where neurological sex, which can and should override one's biological sex. One can literally become the opposite sex through self-designation or chemical and surgical interventions. Children who do not conform to the stereotypes associated with their sex are transgender and should be socially and medically affirmed as such. A vast variety of gender identities exist, including non-binary and gender fluid. Any criticism of these beliefs is akin to violence or genocide of the trans community. Quote, still from the article, these claims are all verifiably false, but people choose to believe them anyway. As Michael Shermer said in his classic book, Why People Believe Weird Things, smart people believe weird things because they are skilled at defending beliefs they arrived at for non-smart reasons.
COVID.
Gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria is a psychiatric condition marked by persistent distress with one's biological sex and an intensely held desire to be perceived as the opposite sex. Historically, gender dysphoria was a rare condition that affected roughly 1 in 10,000 males and 1 in 30,000 females. As of 2022, the number of people aged 13 and up who identify as transgender in the United States is closer to 1 in 167. Contrary to popular belief, being transgender is not innate or biological. There is no brain, blood, or other objective test that distinguishes a trans-identified person from someone who does not identify as trans. The bottom line is, the experience of having gender dysphoria or being transgender is very individualized and not always ideologically influenced. There are 1.64 million people who identify as transgender in the United States alone and millions more globally. Most of them are not interested in disrupting society by erasing sex and law. They are just trying to integrate into society. A vocal minority who operate heavily on social media and promote ideological beliefs about gender should be referred to as gender activists, as they may or may not be transgender themselves. It is important to direct criticism where it belongs, to gender ideology and to the specific actions of individual gender activists, not to transgender people as a whole. By making these distinctions, you can ensure that your ideas are conveyed accurately and effectively without stereotyping an entire group. And that's what we'll try to do here. Clip number two, please.
He's a 12-time NCAA All-American, a 5-time SEC champion. I am one of the fastest 200 butterflyers of all time. But on March 17th of last year, my teammates and I were, and other female swimmers from universities around the country were forced to compete against a biological male named Leah Thomas. Thomas was allowed to compete in the women's division after competing as a member of the University of Pennsylvania's men's swim team for 3 years. We watched on the side of the pool as Thomas won a national title in the 500-yard freestyle, beating out the most impressive and accomplished female athletes in the country, including Olympians and American record holders. Whereas just the year before, Thomas at best was ranking in the 400s in the men's category. The next day, Thomas and I raced in the 200 freestyle, which ended up in a tie. We went the exact same time down to the 100th of a second. Having only one trophy, the NCAA told me that I would go home empty-handed and this trophy would go to Thomas. And when I questioned this, the NCAA told me that Thomas had to hold it for photo purposes. I was shocked. I felt betrayed and belittled, reduced to a photo op. But my feelings didn't matter. What mattered to the NCAA were the feelings of a biological male. In 1972, Congress enacted Title IX to end unjust sex discrimination in all aspects of education, including college athletics. But by allowing Thomas to displace female athletes in the pool and on the podium, the NCAA intentionally and explicitly discriminated on the basis of sex. Although the NCAA claimed it acted in the name of inclusion, its policies in fact excluded female athletes. But that is not all. In addition to being forced to give up our awards, our titles, and our opportunities, the NCAA forced female swimmers to share a locker room with Thomas, a 6'4", 22-year-old male who was fully intact with male genitalia. Let me be clear. We were not forewarned. We were not asked for our consent, and we did not give our consent. If nothing else, I hope you can truly see how this is a violation of our privacy and how some of us have felt uncomfortable, awkward, embarrassed, and even traumatized by this experience. I know I don't speak for everyone. It's impossible to speak for everyone, But I can attest to the tears that were shed on that pool deck by these poor 9th and 17th place finishers who missed out on being named an All-American by one place. And I can attest to the extreme discomfort in the locker room when you turn around and there's a male watching you undress while exposing himself. I can attest to the anger and frustration from these girls who had worked so hard and sacrificed so much to get to this point. Unfortunately, our experiences are not unique. The number of female athletes who have been denied opportunities, again, traumatized or hurt by policies that claim to be promoting inclusion, is growing at an alarming rate around this country. It's simply unacceptable, and the integrity of women's sports is lost.
Thank you.
Wow.
That's what we're doing to our ladies, everybody. That's Riley Gaines. She's a swimmer from Gallatin, Tennessee, who competed for the University of Kentucky NCAA swim team. She was the 2022 Southeast Conference Women's Swimming and Diving Scholar Athlete of the Year. From 2021, I found this headline: "Women athletes are crushing it at Kentucky and nationally. Riley Gaines, a junior, won the gold medal in the 200 freestyle. Amazing. Fast forward to 2022. She tied for fifth with University of Pennsylvania swimmer Leah Thomas, who was the first openly trans woman champion in the NCAA to compete in the women's division. Pretty sure that's the one he tanked just to stay competitive. And what did the illustrious leaders at University of California, San Francisco say in defense of Mrs. Riley Gaines when trans activists screamed, yells, insulted her, which I played for you the other day? Thank you to our students who participated peacefully in the Thursday's evening event. It took tremendous bravery to stand in a challenging space. I am proud of the moments where we listened and asked insightful questions. I am also proud of the moments when our students demonstrated the value of free speech and the right to protest peacefully. These issues do not go away, and these values are very much at our core. This feels difficult because it is difficult. As you reflect, process, and begin to heal, please remember that there are people, resources, and services available and ready to receive our Gator community, including faculty, staff members, coaches, and mentors who are here to support you. Sincerely, Jamila Moore, ED.D, VP for Student Affairs." Yep, sincerely is correct use of that word. What do you think, Steve?
I think they're just saying, yeah, we know what we did, and live with it, and we're going to placate you with all these nonsense verbal, well, thank you for not rioting. The reality is the crowd should have just stood up and booed and just walked out, and everybody should have met that guy who was on the podium, should have met him feel like a snail, because no human being has a right, Steve, to steal the honor of first place or second place or third place as a male against a female. It's just,
yeah,
atrocious.
You're not wrong. I mean, they're cheating. It's a little bit like stolen valor, yep, where somebody like a senator from Connecticut says they were in the Vietnam War, but they really weren't. So they're stealing the valor of those who really were and died.
Yes.
And they're cheating because he has the ability to beat 99.9% of the women out there, and that is just not a fair competition, and I don't know why the NCAA allows it. What I'd really like to see is for every woman athlete to just say, I'm not competing, forget it, we're out, we're not doing it. He can just swim all by himself and have his time records, I guess, if they must, but it would change the rules back, I think, the way they were. But then of course these kids train for their whole lives, this is their shot, it's their time, it's now. They can't really afford to pause and take a year off just to make a protest. So it's unfortunate. They're in terrible, terrible spots. Moving on.
Yep.
As we predicted, this is a headline. As we predicted, Gavin Newsom's shtick isn't going over well with Democrats in red states, by Jennifer Van Laar. Gavin Newsom is the latest California political superstar to suffer this fate, and he hasn't even declared for president of the United States yet. Over the last week or so, he's been traveling to red states, acting like the savior who will be bringing enlightenment to the rubes stuck there. Unsurprisingly, for anyone who's ever lived outside a narcissistic bubble, that doesn't go over well, especially in the South. The governor is known to spend hours a day absorbing far-right media and often laments conservatives' ability to dominate the narrative. Somehow, Democrats are constantly on the defense, he wrote in a recent campaign email. That has to end. We have to flip the red state freedom narrative on its head. While Newsom's advisors compromise the dominant campaign team in California, they have little experience with the politics of conservatives in America. And therein lies the problem. Those of us in California are very happy to have the rest of America find out just how unbearable and frankly not very smart Gavin Newsom is. Remember back in 2013? I'm actually switching gears here. That was it. Gavin Newsom, apparently not very smart, according to her. Remember back in 2013, President Barack Obama's 2008 campaign was fined $375,000 by the Federal Election Commission for campaign reporting violations, one of the largest fees ever levied against a presidential campaign. Politico has learned $375,000 is a huge fine, said Republican election lawyer Jason Torchinsky. It may be one of their top 5 or 10 largest fines ever. Well, hold on, brothers and sisters. Records are made to be broken. Leonardo DiCaprio testified that CCP-linked Malaysian financier, now a fugitive, sent $30 million to Obama during 2012 campaign. He told me that he and a group were going to make a significant contribution to the Democratic Party. I said, wow, that's a lot of money. Movie star Leonardo DiCaprio said, took the stand in a federal trial on Monday that seeks to hammer down the details of what appears to be a money funneling scheme that features a Malaysian financier funneling tens of millions of dollars through a prominent 90s rap artist for the purpose of donating to former President Barack Obama's 2012 re-election campaign. Prakash Rel Praz Michael, founder of the Fugees, has been recruited by Lowe in an effort to funnel money to Obama's reelection bid because foreigners are not allowed to contribute to U.S. campaigns. The report indicated that Michael had taken tens of millions of dollars to lobby the government on behalf of the Chinese government. However, it turns out that much of the money was stolen. Lowe is now being accused of embezzling $4.5 billion from 1MDB, Malaysia's state investment fund. Prosecutors have claimed that Michael received over $20 million from foreign accounts, which were then passed off to 20 straw donors from June to November 2012, according to The Post. These donors were believed to have made the contributions to the Obama campaign in their names so that money could not be tracked back to Lowe. Michael was apparently paid $70 million for his assistance to Lowe. As a result, the Fugees artist is now facing 11 criminal counts of attempting to influence the Obama and Trump administrations, per the report. Prosecutors have also noted that the artist is being accused of attempting to interfere with Trump's investigation into Lowe. Clip number 3, please.
We're not done through the Patriot Act. They were done through executive order by George W. Bush. And that's why the first thing I will do when I am president is call in my attorney general and have he or she review every executive order to determine which of those have undermined civil liberties, which are unconstitutional, and I will reverse them with a stroke of a pen. And so that is actually how, that's actually how the worst abuses have occurred. That's what happened with Guantanamo. That's what happened with the warrantless wiretaps. That's what's happened with the suspension of habeas corpus. That's what's happened in terms of the rounding up of Americans of Muslim extraction. Those weren't done through the Patriot Act. Those were all done separately. The first Patriot Act, I wasn't there, so I did not vote for that. The second one, I actually worked with Russ Feingold, who is one of the people who opposed it, to try to amend it to deal with some of its excesses. There were some provisions in the Patriot Act that actually did address changes that needed to take place. And let me give you a specific example. Prior to the Patriot Act, you could not wiretap a phone that wasn't land-based. Now think about it. Nobody uses a land-based phone anymore. Certainly, people who might be engaging in terrorism aren't going to be using an old dial-up phone. Right? So it made sense then to change that law. And there were some other provisions that made sense. There were a number of provisions that went way overboard, including, for example, going through library records. We instituted a series of amendments that changed some of the worst excesses of the previous law. Some of the other amendments were blocked by the administration and the Republican Congress. But I want everybody to understand, you know, I taught constitutional law for 10 years. I take the Constitution very seriously. The biggest problems that we're facing right now have to do with George Bush trying to bring more and more power into the executive branch and not go through Congress at all.
I guess he learned a lesson from George Bush, because what did he do when he got in there?
Yep. He vowed to reverse Bush laws, 10 years of constitutional law, learned the wrong lessons. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to my last quotes for the week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to Rumble or Spotify or iTunes and hit the subscribe button and follow us. While you're there, go ahead and leave a comment. And thanks for doing it. How to Create a Socialist State by Saul Alinsky. There are 8 levels of control that must be obtained before you are able to create a socialist state. The first is the most important. Number 1, healthcare. Control healthcare and you control the people. 2, poverty. Increase the poverty level as high as possible. Poor people are easier to control and will not fight back if you are providing everything for them to live. 3, debt. Increase the debt to an unsustainable level. That way you are able to increase taxes and this will produce more poverty. Gun control. Remove your people's ability to defend themselves from the government. That way you are able to create a police state. Welfare. Number 5, take control of every aspect of their lives. Food, housing, and income. 6, education. Take control of what people read and listen to. Take control of what children learn in school. Think Common Core. 7, religion. Remove the belief in God from the government and schools. Number 8, last but not least, class warfare. Divide the people into the wealthy and the poor. This will cause more discontent, and it will be easier to take tax the wealthy with the support of the poor. Sound familiar, Steve?
Yes. I'm reading as Rules for Radicals. I'll have to go back and reread it and see where he talks about this kind of stuff, but it's amazing.
That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Brandon Lewis. Let's go, Brandon. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of mcview.us. See you next week, and peace in our time.
Recording stopped.
I know I threw you for a loop there, but...
Children and the pumpkins at the county fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like rolling thunder. Lord, I love the land where I was born.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.